Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. We got a great show for you today. We're going to cover a bunch of companies, Ernest, TFI's renaissance or recovery. We also want to talk about the data companies like Moody's and TMX and MSCI. They've been kind of caught in the downdraft of this AI SaaS-pocalypse, as they call it.
Yeah.
We'll also give a little update on Constellation Software. I see that they are going to finally have a conference call with their earnings, so we'll get into that and what that means and what we should expect. Maybe also cover a couple other companies, Waste Connections and Garmin. So we've got a lot of companies to cover, and we'll do our best to talk on a high level about high-quality businesses that we really like and focus on the long term. And if you like this podcast, please subscribe to us, of course, on Apple, on Spotify, and on YouTube. Our Spotify numbers, our YouTube numbers are growing. We really appreciate everyone who's subscribing to our podcast and checking it out. A lot of nice feedback, good comments, sometimes some mean feedback, but we're big boys and we can take it. If you have any interest in finding more about Baskin Wealth Management, we've been managing money for clients for well over 25 years, and we're still growing, still adding portfolio managers, and would love to chat with you about your portfolio if you have any questions. So, Ernest, February, what are we, halfway through already? Almost done. The markets seem to be only rewarding commodity names, but finally one of our commodity stocks is participating, and that's Canadian Natural Resources. We've done a number of podcasts on Canadian Natural. We started buying it in 2022 on the simple thesis that it has long-term reserves. It's the best operator in the oil and gas space. It was trading at a discount to large super majors like Shell and BP. And we thought that was ridiculous because CNQ has better assets, way better operations, long life reserves, as we talked about. And lo and behold, after 3-4 years, the stock finally worked. I remember the stock when we bought it didn't work for a year or two. But that's how markets work. If you're a long-term investor, you focus on the fundamentals. And if the fundamentals do fine, the stock price will take care of itself.
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons contributing to the strong performance of not just Canadian Natural, but kind of all the Canadian heavy oil companies.
Yeah, I read today that the Canadian oil and gas services index is at its highest level since 2008. Well, so you haven't made money? Yeah, I mean, it's at an all-time high since 2008. That means you haven't made money on oil stocks for near 18 years if you held them. So you have to be careful, obviously, with commodity stocks, buying and holding them. They're more of a trading vehicle. But there's good reasons why CNQ is more of a long-term investment.
Right. And I think the first thing is that oil prices have been going up, mm-hmm. partly because of the, well, not partly, but in largely because of what's the uncertainty going on in Iran right now.
For sure. For sure. Oil prices are at about $66 a barrel. I think oil was well below 60 for a good chunk of 2025. And then it's picked up in the last few months. No question that causes uncertainty. Whether or not the oil price is going to stick around there or go higher, hard to know, but that's not our thesis. When we bought CNQ, we bought it around $35 Canadian. It's about $55, $58 Canadian now. Oil prices were much higher when we bought it 3-4 years ago. So, you know, predicting what the oil price is going to do is impossible. Why it's done so well is because it's a great operating business and they keep on raising the dividend.
And I think one other factor that's helped the Canadian oil sands is there's been kind of renewed concern in the industry following Shell's comments that they were running out of reserves, mm-hmm. and that they were going to have to make major discoveries to continue to produce at the same rate that they
used
to. Which
company isn't running out of reserves?
The Canadian oil sands.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that was kind of our thesis all along, which was that when you have a very large asset that you don't have to continue to go out and look for more oil every year, mm-hmm. you can focus on reducing the cost of extracting those barrels.
One of our thoughts was that Canada would unlock more infrastructure to get oil to other markets. It did happen, but has it really benefited CNQ and other oil sands companies to a material degree yet?
I think it's been a slow move. Mm-hmm. There's been kind of green shoots towards that direction, a kind of buzz about building a new pipeline to the west. But I think the one other thing that I think has contributed to the improvement in sentiment is that after what has been happening in Venezuela, and you know, Chevron and some of these companies kind of being, I don't know if I want to invest all this money in an oil reserve where I don't know what's going to happen in a year or two in terms of the political situation. I think there is a bit of a scarcity premium for Canadian oil assets where the regulatory framework is there, the infrastructure is there, and you know, you can be sure that they're going to be pumping out oil in 10, 20 years.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And those, if you forgot what we're talking about, when the Venezuela, we're not quite, there's not been a lot of news yet on Venezuela, whether they've reopened the oil fields or what's going on. But the worry was that Venezuela would turn on the taps and U.S. would buy more oil or oil sands from Venezuela instead of Canada. That may happen, but that may happen a long time in the future. That turned out to be a fantastic buying opportunity for the Canadian oil and gas companies at that time.
And I wouldn't sit here and say that we knew specifically that Canadian natural stock was going to be up 25% in 2 months.
No.
But I think the way we've always thought about it was that it was a very long-lived asset that they can continue to produce at current rates and grow it for 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. It did, like 10 times free cash flow was always an attractive rate, even after considering the volatility of oil prices.
So when your thesis plays out and the stock performs, you know, it behooves you as a portfolio manager, as an analyst, to go back and say, have we made all the money we're going to make on this stock? Is it overvalued? Is there more things to unlock? You know, given that this is a stock that we can be proud of, that it's worked over the last few years, what's your feeling about its prospects going forward?
Well, I think one important note is that we manage a portfolio rather than kind of individual securities. Mm-hmm. And so we only really have two energy names in our portfolio, which are Canadian Natural and Tourmaline Oil. And we're happy to have this exposure in the portfolio because of the kind of the diversification benefits relative to the other names that we have. Mm-hmm. And so even though the valuation is a little bit higher, I think that these are both continue to be very well-run companies. I don't think they are egregiously overvalued.
Well, Tourmaline hasn't done anything. Right. Well, we'll get to Tourmaline in a second, but I guess the thesis is not a lot has changed, just the valuation. But the valuation, you're saying, is not crazily valued. So hanging on, you could still have decent returns from owning CNQ going forward.
Right. Canadian Natural still trades at 15 times earnings, assuming a fairly, not even assuming $80 or $100 WTI.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's crazy compared to, I think the S&P trades at like 22 times earnings.
Fair enough.
For, you know,
a durable company, yes, which has decades and decades of reserve.
If you wanted to switch to another company, you have to pay capital gains taxes.
Correct.
You're probably switching to a company with lower quality of management and lower assets. Mm-hmm. And so why would we do that?
Yeah, exactly. So this Tourmaline, which has not performed well since we purchased it, it's done fine. We've gotten a lot of special and nice dividends, so we're happy with the income component. But with oil and gas stocks at record highs, this one is really dragged. We've spoken about Tourmaline before on the podcast before, what it's doing and why the stock hasn't been performing. And it's pretty much because they're reinvesting back into the business for growth because they see huge opportunities for natural gas. I think this shares a lot of similar elements to Canadian Natural. Great operators, significant inventory. You lay out some more positive things and why we think Tourmaline is the next one to start running.
Yeah, I think the main issue for Tourmaline has, there was a bit of a winter spike in natural gas pricing, but that
ended we know it. It was a polar vortex was freezing. Yeah.
But that didn't end up being a durable, higher pricing environment. Mm-hmm. Tourmaline has been investing heavily into the infrastructure in the northern BC region, where they are kind of preparing for LNG to ramp up and drive up natural gas pricing overall. I think we're still waiting for that. But free cash flow is going to be higher in following years after they're finished this build out.
When is the build out expected to be completed? 2027. Yeah. So there's two more years pretty much of higher investment. But this is what we want. If Tourmaline can reinvest the cash flows and earn better returns than paying us a dividend, isn't that what we want?
No, and I think it's important to kind of take a step back and look at what Tourmaline has done over the last, pretty much since its beginning, mm-hmm. which is that it started from nothing in about 2009. They scaled up to become the largest natural gas player in 15 years.
Mm-hmm. In Canada.
In Canada.
Yeah.
And then in 2020, when there was a lot of kind of fear about the energy sector, they were able to acquire a lot of assets at a very distressed price,
mm-hmm.
and find creative ways to fund that by creating Topaz Energy, which is like kind of a royalty company. Mm-hmm. And so if you put everything together, it's just a very, very well-run business.
They also acquired assets from Crew and Bonavista. Yep. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So, and these were distressed companies when the price of natural gas got pummeled after the, I think there was a big spike in natural gas as a result of the pandemic. And then it's been sitting at low levels for a long time.
And so I think everything that they're doing is preparing for this environment where Canada is going to be a major exporter of LNG and natural gas to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think they are doing everything right. And so
in the meantime,
even if the stock price is not moving, mm-hmm. I think we're very happy to be patient with it.
Meantime, CEO Mike Rose continues to buy more shares of Tourmaline Oil around the $60 range. The stock's been stuck there for a long period of time. But this is one where you can say, hey, I am getting paid to wait.
Right.
I'm getting paid. I'm getting 4-5% dividends. Natural gas prices have been a little bit higher in late year 25 and early 26. That might flow through to maybe better free cash flow going forward to help fund the expansion that it's going through. So let's quickly move on to some companies that are in the news for us, companies with reported earnings. TFI International, this was a complete dog in our portfolio in 2025 after being one of the best performers in our portfolio for many, many years. But big recovery at the end of the year. I think it came back 30% from the bottom. Stock is up nicely year to date. The earnings still haven't recovered to pre-pandemic levels or what have you, but the company has taken lots of great steps to improve its balance sheet, to improve its operations. And also, we get a sense from the trucking industry that pricing has been a lot firmer and trucking companies are in better position now for a freight recovery that hopefully will happen in 26.
Yeah, so the hope for TFI was that 25 was a kind of a transition year, not just for them, but for the entire trucking industry, mm-hmm. as they work through the oversupply issues and kind of the uncertainty about trade and weakening industrial activity. Mm-hmm. I think that there was some hope that 26 would be better because of changing language rules, mm-hmm. kind of a crackdown on truck drivers who didn't know how to speak English. And
what does that mean? The fewer trucks on fewer
exactly.
Supply demand, right?
Basically, that would mean lower supply.
Yeah.
I think what TFI says is, yeah, we've seen spot rates for trucking start to go up a little bit, mm-hmm. but not really enough to give them confidence in a higher outlook for the year so far.
And they also mentioned that there's still uncertainty with the renegotiation of the old NAFTA, the CUSMA, right. USMCA, however you want to call it. No one knows what's going to happen. We don't know if Trump's just going to rip it all up and start again or there'll be a negotiation. Hard to know. But what are the risks to TFI if we run into trouble with that agreement again?
Yeah, so I think there has been quite a big shift in tone over the last year from the strategy going forward, where originally TFI was looking to add scale to the LTL division, UPS, TForce Freight, by making a larger acquisition of another LTL player. I think they said now they want to see how this trade thing goes before they're committing, because we don't know what the rules are going to be and what the landscape is going to be for trade.
In the meantime, the company is just printing. It's unbelievable, right? So probably one of the worst years it's ever had in the freight business.
Yep.
Still made a ton of money and generated $10 US a share in free cash flow. So you mentioned CNQ, when we bought it, was trading at 10 times free cash flow. That's pretty rare to find a profitable business with good outlooks and good prospects trading at 10 times free cash flow. It's rare.
Yeah, based on a range of outcomes.
Yeah, based range of outcomes. Yeah. But it definitely TFI definitely delivered and was trading at one point in 2025 at 10 times free cash flow. That probably was way too cheap. How does it do it? How did TFI produce such great results even though revenues were plummeting?
Well, I think that's a main part of their strategy, which is kind of unique from other trucking companies, where they try to really focus on being an asset-light operator, despite trucking being kind of a very capital-intensive business. And they do this by using, through the incentive structure, where they incentivize their divisions to use more brokerage, to use more owner-operators rather than on-balance-sheet equipment, and focusing more on the logistics side. And I think the reality for TFI is that trucking is, you know, it's a commodity business. It's very cyclical. It goes up and down. But what they've been really trying to focus on is the controllables. So
they also raised their dividend twice in 2025. Yes. So once again, when you raise the dividend, what you're signaling to your investors, your shareholders, is that you have confidence in the future, right? Why would you pay out more cash flow this year if you think things are getting worse? So, I mean, and the company also is buying back stock like crazy. What did they spend, $200 million last year?
Yeah.
Buying back stock, how much of is out of the market cap? A few percent?
Yeah.
Yeah, so everything is going, I mean, what they can controlling the controllables, they've done an amazing job. They're still in a waiting period. We still got these tariff issues, so it's not the greatest outlook, but there's a sense that when it recovers, it's going to be massive upsize leverage for TFI.
No, and I think there is a point here where both for Canadian Natural and for TFI, what we see is that the stock market rebounded well in advance of the results actually improving.
Every single time.
Right?
Yeah. So if you get scared out at the bottom, which happens to many investors, chances are the news continues to get worse. But at some point, the market already prices in, or investors have given up, and then any bit of good news or any or the lessening of the worst news can lead to a giant recovery in the stock price.
Right.
TFI stock hit, I think, 110 or 120 Canadian. Now it's 160 Canadian. The news has not gotten better,
right,
but there are green shoots emerging in the story.
Right, and that's not to say that you just kind of blindly buy every company that's down.
No.
But if you own a company that you have conviction for the long term, then I think this is an encouraging data point.
Yeah, I mean, TFI is a cyclical business, which means that in a linear world, it's not going to report growing earnings every single year. It's going to do an amazing, and then it's going to blow up, and then it's going to do amazing. I wouldn't say blow up, but at least pull back more than like a Visa or a MasterCard, right? Where a Visa may, in a bad year, in a recession year, its sales may be down 2%.
Probably up 5.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean, right? Versus a TFI where its sales could be down 10 to 15% in a very bad year. We don't necessarily love cyclical businesses, but I think they make sense in a portfolio of 30 companies that you can't just buy all the same names, right? You can't just own an Uber and a DoorDash and
Palantir
and all the high growth names. You know, maybe you can, but you're gonna be in to get punched in the face when they reverse course. One of the themes that we're talking about and looking at, of course, is software, data providers. You know, there's been many blogs and articles and tweets, and everybody has an opinion on if software is going to be disrupted or not. You know, we've done our research for now. We don't see any evidence with the companies that we own that there's major or material disruption. Not to say it won't happen, but obviously with a Constellation Software that's pulled back a lot, or Topicus has pulled back a lot, that has given us an opportunity to absolutely buy more. This is what we love to do. And so one of the things we did, Ernest, and I want you to talk about it, is we made a trade to increase our position in Constellation Software.
Yeah, so I think we, in these kinds of markets where everything is getting indiscriminately sold off, mm-hmm. I think we look for opportunities to increase the quality of the businesses that we own.
So what some people need to understand, that a lot of stocks trade it as factors, as groups, as baskets of stock. There's something called IGV, is that the software ETF? So if you wanted to bet on software or bet against software, you would do it by in playing that ETF instead of buying individual companies. And if everybody hates software companies and they're selling that ETF, they're all going to go down, whether they're going to be disrupted or not.
Yeah, and even though we are long-term investors in stocks, I think it's still a continuous process about looking for the names that you want to own, ensuring that the portfolio have is exactly the highest quality companies that you want. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the current sell-off, and we've done this in prior sell-offs before as well, we look at what's down, like whether there was something that we think is even more attractive than it was before, mm-hmm. compared to what we already own in the portfolio, mm-hmm. and then see if there's an opportunity to make a trade. And so we sold our Adobe stock. Mm-hmm. It's not that we don't have conviction in Adobe anymore, but we just felt that money is better used in Constellation Software.
That's right. And we could also get a capital loss, which is some benefit. We do expect to make some trims this year of some larger high quality names in our portfolio and do a little bit of rebalancing because of our style. Even though we did not have the most fantastic year in 2025, it's very hard for us to find, for long-term clients, a stock in a capital loss position. Right. Adobe is essentially the only material capital loss. It's not that bad of a capital loss. We thought, here's an opportunity to turn lemons into lemonade.
Yeah.
I think we have more conviction in Constellation Software, more conviction in the fact that it's a well more diversified company versus Adobe, which could be more at risk. Who knows?
Right.
And it has fallen to a smaller position as a result. So we wanted to show conviction in our best idea. And I think Constellation is our better idea than Adobe. We don't know if one's going to do better than the other,
right?
But we have confidence in our research on Constellation.
Yep. And I think we'll probably make some more trades as well over as
100%.
To the extent that things continue to be like this.
For sure. If, if the market can... Speaking of software adjacent companies, Moody's and TMX Group, they do have some software-ish type businesses.
Yep.
But these companies are more of the network effect, stamp of approval type business, right? We've talked ad nauseum about the Moody's benefit as a credit rater. Mm-hmm. If you get a Moody's credit rating, then your funding costs are lower versus using Joe Blow rating service. We've talked about how on the there's lots of options to list your stock on the in Canada. There's a number of different exchanges, but if you want notoriety, if you want the network effect, if you want the visibility to distribution, you list on the TSX. And so there's potential for parts of their businesses where they may sell data to other to end users and just put it in with a wrapper. That could be a problem. That could be disrupted by AI. But given these companies own proprietary stamps of approval, proprietary networks, it seems quite unlikely that they would be disrupted from AI. And in fact, they may be even more durable in this day and age where people want, you know, you want that certification, you want that guarantee, you want that comfort that there's a company there that's paying attention. And sometimes there's even regulatory requirements that you have to use their services.
There was the real catalyst for these kind of financial data stocks to be down was, I think there were two. Number one was that Claude had launched a plugin that allows you to basically do financial analysis.
Okay.
So that was, that caused a, like, people were worried about that. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, S&P Global, which is Moody's largest competitor, they reported some weakness in some of their analytics divisions. Mm-hmm. So that kind of basically confirmed everybody's fear that they're getting disrupted by AI.
And then lo and behold, Moody's comes out with its earnings report and blows everybody away, right? They actually accelerated revenue growth.
Yeah.
No issues with their data business, strong guidance for 2026. So what's the disconnect here?
And this is exactly what we're talking about when the market is kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. And I'm not taking a shot at S&P Global because I think it's a really good business as well.
It's a superior business for sure.
But it's really a very different business from Moody's and especially from TMX Group because S&P Global, the largest contributor to their revenues is analytics and data. So the ratings business is big, but it's only about 40% of profits. Mm-hmm. Whereas for Moody's, ratings is 2/3 of profits. Mm-hmm. And even within the analytics business, S&P's analytics business is very different from Moody's analytics business, where S&P's is comprised of Capital IQ, which is kind of like a Bloomberg light.
Yeah.
And they also own an energy data market and an auto data market.
All the data assets that are bought from IHS.
Exactly.
IHS market. Yeah.
Yeah. And so these are still good businesses, but I think a little bit maybe less essential to the workflows of their customers than Moody's Analytics.
For those that don't understand a word that we're saying, all financial documents of publicly traded companies are accessible on the internet, right? And so you can hire a service to collate that data and put it in the different forms and calculate metrics and all this other stuff. But you have to assume that AI can access that too,
right?
And make fancy charts and graphs and a user experience that could be just as good. So making the data look better is not necessarily a moat. Having the proprietary data, having the ability to say, "Hey, we're the guys who are in charge of whether the rating is good or not, or we're the guys in charge of the benchmark," and so everybody uses it, so you should too. These are the things that give value in a world where data and knowledge is essentially useless because AI can access it.
And that was kind of the thesis on why S&P Global bought IHS Markit to begin with, which was that they could put IHS Markit's energy pricing data, kind of their auto data, and use Capital IQ as a distribution for that data. Mm-hmm. So have that proprietary knowledge. I think how that differs from Moody's analytics business is that Moody's specifically focuses on three markets for analytics, which are regulated markets where they can provide proprietary solutions for their customers. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, one of the things that they do is they have a very large KYC business. And so what this is Know your client. And what this is it's a very large database that they put together themselves on kind of vulnerable on all the entities in the world, who's connected to what company, who's related to this government and has this background, so that banks and companies like Baskin Wealth, we do KYC, were able to comply with regulations to not launder money, right? Mm-hmm. And so for these types of businesses, it is non-replaceable by AI.
They're the authority. They're the determinists.
Yes.
You can't replace it with AI. Even though AI could get maybe the same data.
Well, first of all, AI can't get that same data because a lot of this is not public.
It's not public.
A lot of it is aggregated by Moody's using kind of proprietary data feeds and connections to sources that other people simply can't get.
That's right.
Right. And more importantly is that if you're a bank and you want to meet your anti-money laundering requirements, you can't ask AI to do this, right? Like no matter how good the AI is, you need to be able to prove that somebody else looked at it as well and is proving that you're not laundering money. So,
I think
long story short is that Moody says, look, like regardless of how you're interacting with this data, whether it be through AI or whatever, you're still going to need our database.
Yeah.
And so that's why we think we're going to be benefiting.
We don't care if your AI agent pays the fee to access it or Ernest, a person, access it. You still got to access it to run your business. So that's fascinating. TMX Group also has proprietary data, more of a listings business, of course, makes money on trading, makes money on new issues. With the TSX at all-time highs, it should make sense that TMX had a great year. I think it reported profits up 20% and double-digit revenue growth and guided for a good year in 2026. The stock didn't react, of course. The stock fell with a lot of these other, like Moody's fell, MSCI fell, S&P Global fell, you name it, FICO, all these names had fallen. But I think there's, you know, definitely some companies that are at risk and some companies that not only are not at risk, but probably more valuable in a world where you're going to have all these agents looking for stuff and who knows who's getting what and who knows who's interacting with whom. You want an authority, a regulatory check mark. You get it with the TMX and the Moody's and the MSCIs of the world.
Yeah, and with TMX Group, I think a key part of their strategy has been to grow the analytics business.
Mm-hmm.
At the expense of, or grow as a share of total revenues relative to listings, which are kind of a more volatile business. And, you know, obviously analytics businesses are not in favor today, but the bulk of their analytics business is Trayport today, which is a kind of a terminal that you can access energy pricing and is used by utilities and energy traders in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And again, similar to Moody's, this is not data that you can just get from the open web because the reason that Trayport has such a dominant position in the energy trading market in Europe is because all the stars aligned for the industry to work together to create a kind of aggregated source of pricing data that will never be done again.
Yeah.
And so you just can't replace this with AI, like no matter, even if the data is being, even if you're using an agent now to access trading data and kind of automate this process, it's still going to be going through Trayport.
And what about its investment in the ETF business? How's that doing?
Well, I think it's just benefiting from the strong markets, right? Because their ETF business is largely from the acquisition of Vettafi, which is kind of nichier robo-type indices. And so when the market goes up, and especially enthusiasm for these types of names, then they're going to benefit.
Very, very good. Speaking, we forgot to mention about Constellation Software, of course, that it's going to host a conference call. New CEO, of course, Mark Miller. Mark Leonard, unfortunately, stepped down because of health reasons. Given the plummeting stock price, I think investors are and shareholders are quite nervous, obviously, and would like to hear from the company. This is a company that generally doesn't reveal very much unless it has its annual meeting. And even in its quarterly reports, it just tells you what the facts are, right? There's no hyperbole. We had record revenues and this happened and this. They don't give any guidance. So why do you think there's a change in the tone? Is it the stock price reaction, the panic over AI worries?
Well, I think for sure.
Yeah.
Because, and we saw this with Amazon, where for a long time, Bezos didn't participate in conference calls because, you know, he'd rather run the company rather than spend like 2 hours on a call with analysts.
That's right.
But now when the stock was tanking in 22, Andy Jassy was new. People didn't know who he was. People don't know if Amazon is in good hands, right? And so it made sense for him to rejoin the conference calls.
Yeah.
And so similarly with Constellation Software, where in the past, I think given the track record and everybody understanding what Constellation is all about, like, I think it was fine that they didn't do conference calls, but, you know, times change. And I think you, at least to your employees, you have a responsibility to be more open about how you're thinking about all this stuff that's happening.
So today we're recording on, I think it's Feb 19th. I think next week, Topicus and Lumen, the subdivisions of or publicly traded companies of Constellation will report earnings. They're not doing conference calls, I don't think.
No, but yeah. I think this is the thing that I think sometimes we forget when dealing with stocks, which is that stocks are not just a number that is like going up and down that if you're a company, you can ignore it, right? Yeah. There's real world consequences to having a higher or lower stock price. Mm-hmm. In Constellation's case, now that the stock price is lower, I think that it has an impact on their ability to retain employees because these people have to buy shares in Constellation with their bonus, right? So it matters.
Yeah, but they could also work for a private equity company acquiring software companies and get shares in private equity that are going horrible too.
Right.
So it is a tough, but no question. When people ask what are insiders doing at Constellation, they're buying all the time, right? Because you have to use your bonus. You have to use a part of your compensation to buy shares.
Right. It's not like those software companies where what the insiders are doing are pausing their selling programs.
Yeah.
And that's showing their confidence in the stock.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. I mean, a lot of tech companies, your compensation is stock.
Yep.
That's how you get paid. And if your stock works, you get filthy rich. Yep. Look at all the guys at Google and Microsoft and Apple and so on and so forth. With Constellation, they have gotten rich, but recently poor.
yes.
However, still haven't diluted any shareholders.
Yep.
Still making deals left and right. I think there's announcements of deals almost every single day at Constellation. They've said in their last conference call, when they talked about Mark Leonard retiring, they said it's business as usual.
Also increasingly releasing new AI products.
Mm-hmm. So it may be a change of the guard, new CEO, new rules, and new way to explain the markets. And I don't think you can learn whether that's having conference calls is a bearish or bullish. Maybe even Berkshire Hathaway will start doing conference calls.
Who knows?
I mean, there's new people running the ship and times do change. So I think we'll leave it there. We've covered a lot of companies. We want to get to a lot of other names in our portfolio next week. Canadian banks are reporting earnings again. Canadian banks have been on fire. One of the best places to be. We're pleased with our National Bank investment, but we'll want to see what they're saying about the Canadian economy as we head into 2026. So with that, we'll see you back here real soon. Thank you so much for joining us. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.